From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
And I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. I'm the producer of Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. Happy Friday. It's great to be with you once again. Lots on deck for us here today. So much going on in Capitol Hill. You know, the Trump administration is imposing new sanctions against Russians who launched cyber attacks against the U.S. or tried to interfere in the 2016 presidential elections. And North Korea, in a potential meeting between President Trump and dictator Kim Jong-un, will it happen? Waiting on Congressman Steve Russell of Oklahoma. He is supposed to be here in just a moment with his observations on that domestic policy issue and more. And the failed Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton has previously blamed her 2016 loss on an array of other forces, which she says beyond her control. And this time, it's white women. Patrice Lee Onwuka, she's a senior policy analyst at the Independent Women's Forum. She'll weigh in on that matter. And a California high school teacher was placed on paid administrative leave. And folks, this is a story you're not going to want to miss. She was placed on leave this week after she pointed out an apparent double standard surrounding Wednesday's national school walkout against gun violence. Julianne Benzel, she's a history teacher at Rockland High School in Rockland, California. She'll be here to discuss the ordeal. This is one of those stories that we bring you time and time again to highlight the outrageous situations going on, the double standards that are going on in our nation and many times in our nation's schools. So looking forward to having her on the show today. And also, we're going to take your calls. We always like to do that. And all of this great content you can find on the web at TonyPerkins.com, TonyPerkins.com. You can also follow Tony on Twitter at T Perkins. And you can follow me at Russ Jones Reports. And I want to remind you, Watchmen on the Wall National Briefing, that is scheduled for May 23rd through the 25th. Of this year at the Hyatt Regency Capitol Hill Hotel in Washington, D.C. All the pastors, it's a great event. It's a briefing. You will hear from high-level folks on issues that matter to you, what's going on with our lawmakers across the country, what's going on with our lawmakers in Washington, D.C., It's an opportunity for you to get the tools that you need to impact the saints, to give your parishioners the tools they need to discuss the issues that are important to them as well. And how many times have you been in a conversation where you wished you had that knowledge or that information? Man, I wish I would have said that differently, or I wish I would have had that little nugget that makes a difference when you're talking with somebody about issues on abortion and pro-life and, you know, on immigration, all the issues that are important to us here on Washington Watch. So mark your calendar. It's May 23rd through the 25th at the Hyatt Regency Capitol Hill Hotel in Washington, D.C. Are you getting ready for St. Pat's Day? I know I am. I've got some corned beef cabbage that's cooking. We're going to talk about all kinds of things here on the show today. What are you doing this weekend to, you know, to love on your family, to spend time with your friends and family? And what is it that's important to you? I always like to hear from you when we have those callers come in here on Washington Watch. Well, one of the things that we're going to talk about today is a lot going on in regards to foreign policy. It's been a week since President Trump accepted an invitation to meet with North Korea. And this week, the Trump administration imposed stiff sanctions on Russians for election meddling. North Korea's foreign minister attended talks in Stockholm with Sweden's prime minister. This is kind of an interesting dynamic here. The isolated country's latest move in diplomatic chess match that could produce an unprecedented meeting with Donald Trump. And after months of ballistic missile tests and rhetoric going back and forth, put the world on edge there between the United States and North Korea, spurring rounds of United Nations sanctions and dire warnings of potential military conflict on the Korean Peninsula in North Korea. It has pivoted to these negotiations. Well, with us now, we're going to bring in Gordon Chang. He's a Southeast Asia expert. He has agreed to come on with us and talk about these issues. Gordon, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
I appreciate you being available. You know, we've been watching all of these dynamics. It's like watching a good chess match, isn't it? Do you think this meeting with Kim Jong-un is actually going to happen?
I think that it probably will for a couple of reasons. First of all, Kim wants sanctions relief, and so therefore he's got to talk to the international community. And the person who can give him that relief is President Trump. So at some point, and I thought this was going to take a lot longer than it did, but we know sanctions are effective. They're not as effective as I think that they could be. And as I mentioned, I thought that it would take Kim at least another 6 months, more likely 9 months to a year, to come to this point. But I think he's getting around to the realization that he needs help. And the person who's going to give him that help, or at least he hopes, is Donald John Trump.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think these sanctions against North Korea is what's causing them to kind of come to the table, so to speak?
I think they're a large contributing factor. And the reason is we know that the Chinese have been saying that Office Number 39, which is the Kim family slush fund, is running low of cash. At the same time, there are South Korean reports that North Korea will run out of hard currency reserves in October. There are other indications that the regime is not getting the money that it normally needs. And so I think that Kim certainly wants the tap of funds to be turned back on. The other reason why Kim, I think, made the offer is because he wanted to drive a wedge between Seoul and Washington. That's what the Kim family's been trying to do for seven decades, since the end of the fighting in the Korean War. And he thought that Trump would actually say no, and that he would then go to Moon Jae-in, the pro-North Korean South Korea president, and say, look, you know, we Koreans should stick together. These Americans are standing in the way of unification. They're standing in the way of peace. They're warlike, that all the rest of it. And I think Kim felt that he could have a willing audience in Moon. But what President Trump did was he foreclosed that opportunity by saying, yeah, sure, I'll talk to the North Koreans.
And what about Sweden? They're kind of a new player in the mix of all this today. And yesterday, the Sweden Foreign Ministry said that the talks would focus on Sweden's role as a diplomatic representative of the U.S. and other countries. What role do you see them playing?
Well, Sweden could very well be the place where the Trump-Kim talks take place. Sweden has often represented U.S. interests in Pyongyang, so this, in a sense, is something that we have seen before. Ri Yong-ho, the North Korean minister, was supposed to be there for only 2 days. He's extended his stay by 24 hours. So I think that we're probably going to see, I would guess, that the Swedish announced that there will be talks and they'll be held someplace in Sweden.
And it looks like that they are kind of playing matchmaker, aren't they? Negotiating and where and when and all those sorts of things. And actually, it couldn't come at a better time, because we're just hearing also today that North Korea has begun testing a nuclear reactor that could be used to produce weapons-grade plutonium. Have you been hearing that today?
Yes. I mean, they've restarted their reactor, according to these reports. And we should think, you know, and expect the North Koreans to do things to try to give us an incentive to talk to them. But, you know, I don't think that that's really going to work, because the most important thing is that President Trump said he's going to continue the sanctions, continue the pressure on North Korea during these talks. And that's absolutely the right approach, because we're not losing anything by talking to North Korea if we keep the pressure on. And that's exactly what the administration has said to the world it's going to do.
And apparently experts are saying that these recent satellite imagery shows the reactor has been structurally finished and there's evidence testing has begun. I mean, what, you have been around this for decades, actually. Why would this come out today in light of trying to have a meeting with President Trump?
Well, the North Koreans want to give an incentive to us to talk. So one of the incentives is to stop, you know, whatever they're doing. And so we should expect North Korea to engage in acts that we consider to be provocative and things that we want them not to do, so that we have an incentive to give them what they want.
So provocateurs, this is just one way to say, trying to motivate to make sure that there's a meeting that takes place?
Yes. I mean, this is North Korean playbook. They mix offers of conciliation with threats and provocative actions, and they've done this for decades. There's a playbook the Kim family has. It goes back to Kim Il-sung, who founded the regime. His son used it, and now his grandson is using it. So although the North Koreans are often unpredictable, we know that they do engage in patterns of conduct, which we have seen in the past, many times, in fact.
Now, let me ask you this. You know, President Trump is moving around positions in his cabinet, and Rex Tillerson is out, and Mike Pompeo is on deck to be the new Secretary of State. I worked with Mike Pompeo in Kansas when he ran for Congress. I've known him for quite some time. A very sharp guy. Do you think these moves on President Trump's cabinet are trying to get people in place that can better deal with foreign policy and like issues of North Korea?
That could very well be the effect. I don't know if that was the intention. Secretary of State Tillerson, or then Secretary of State Tillerson, did some things recently that angered President Trump. And so the timing may have been dictated by what Trump correctly saw are acts of disobedience. That would be my sense of why now, but, you know, I don't know. And we won't know for quite some time.
So over the next few days, do you think that the Trump administration will allow the Swedens and others to do the negotiating, or do you actually think his administration will be involved with setting up this meeting?
Well, I think that, you know, at the moment, Sweden is going to be involved in logistical details. And, of course, both the North Koreans and us will also be involved in those details. I don't think Sweden's going to be negotiating important points. I mean, I get the sense that, you know, of course, President Trump is going to be the one making decisions. We saw this very clearly last Thursday when South Korea's envoys came into the Oval Office and surprised the president with those offers. And President Trump surprised the South Koreans by stepping on the spot. You know, in previous administrations, we've had decades of interagency negotiations, studies, deliberations, and presidents have come to the wrong decision. What Trump did was really striking. I think in 45 minutes, without all of that, he came up with the right decision. And so, you know, Trump is not going to let Sweden negotiate something that he wants to do himself.
And you know, Sweden has maintained ties with North Korea and has an embassy. So, you know, that's another good reason. Gordon, we're out of time. Thank you so much. Appreciate you jumping in there and helping us dig through this today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. You have a good weekend. That's Gordon Chang, Southeast Asia expert, always really spot on his analysis. Well, coming up next, Hillary Clinton is at it again. Remember the infamous deplorable statement? Well, this time, the twice-failed presidential candidate blames married white women for her election loss. Patrice Lee will be here next. She's a senior policy analyst at Independent Women's Forum. She'll be here when we return. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, That's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. A candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
We do not do well with white men, and we don't do well with married white women. And part of that is an identification with the Republican Party and a sort of ongoing pressure to vote the way that your husband, your boss, your son, whoever, believes you should.
She hasn't talked to my wife or many women that I know in their marriages. that was Hillary Clinton. She's at it again, a pattern of blaming others for her 2016 election loss during a speaking event over the weekend. First, it was deplorables. This time, she's arguing that President Trump won white women because of their tendency to vote according to the preferences of their male family members and professional superiors. That was at a speaking event in Mumbai, India. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch. With us now is Patrice Lee Onwuka, a senior policy analyst at Independent Women's Forum. Patrice, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on.
Did I say your last name right?
You did. You got it perfectly.
Well, I've been excited to have you on the show and watch your analysis. And this is one of those issues. You know, I have a very good marriage, and I have married to a godly woman who loves the Lord. She loves me, loves her children, but she's an independent thinker. And she comes to her, we talk a lot about things, and sometimes we influence one another. And then sometimes, you know, sometimes we have our different opinions on things. And I just find this amazing that she would say something like this again.
It was really terrible. I mean, it showed her elitism.
Yes.
It is disrespectful to women and to our intelligence. You know, I'm a conservative woman, and for her to suggest that I'm not smart enough to think for myself, but that I have to rely on the men around me is just amazing. But, you know, she's not alone. We have seen the same kind of rhetoric come out of women leaders on the left. If you remember, last year, Michelle Obama told us that any woman who voted against Hillary Clinton didn't like her voice.
Mm-hmm.
And that she's relying on her husband. Gloria Steinem said that all of the girls were supporting Bernie Sanders because they were chasing after boys. And Madeleine Albright said that there is a special place in hell for any woman who doesn't support another woman. So this is not new. We're hearing this from progressive feminist leaders that, you know, if you are independent thinking, if you think about the men in your lives, if you think about issues other than traditional, quote unquote, women's issues, then there is something wrong with you. Really, mm-hmm. The issue is with them.
Yeah, I find this very sexist, don't you? I was just astonished when I heard her say that. And I'm knee deep in politics, as you are. I'm observant about what's going on. And the exit polling after the election actually found, 52% of white women voted for President Trump. And what I was hearing back during the campaign, I think a lot of women got there before men, that maybe President Trump wasn't their first choice, but they're saying he's a strong leader. He may not reflect me in my faith, in my values, but he reflects the things that are important to me and my concern for our country.
It's true. You know, top issues among women are not what you would traditionally call women's issues. What women really care about, and I literally just looked at the generic polling for ballot polling for the 2018 midterm elections. Top on the issue for women across whether independent, Republican, or Democrat are economic issues. Number two, national security issues. Number three, health care. You know, so when Hillary Clinton and some of these progressive female feminists are talking about women in terms of just our gender specific issues, they're really tone deaf because, you know, women are mothers, but we're also business owners. Women are making the financial decisions in their household. They are workers. They employ people as well. So they're thinking about the bottom line. They're thinking about how can they reduce their tax burden, keep more of their money. They're thinking about how they can pay for health care costs. And so, you know, to say that if you're voting for whomever you decide to vote for, whether that was President Trump or Hillary Clinton, that you voted for Trump because your husband told you to do it or your son told you to do it,
right.
That is tone deaf and really disrespectful. But, you know, she also called half of Trump supporters a basket of deplorables who hate Islam, who are racist and sexist and everything under the sun. So I'm not too surprised.
You know, this can't be very helpful for Democrats in the upcoming elections. Don't you just wish you could be a fly on the wall and wondering, are they saying, Hillary, would you just go away? You know, go find a foundation to run. Oh, wait, she's already doing that.
I do think that they, not only are they not embracing Hillary Clinton, they are hoping that she ends her What Happened tour and goes away. Because, you know, I think the party has moved on from the what they thought would be the Clinton dynasty, the idea of that. And the party, honestly, Democrats have really moved to the far left. We saw in the special election in Pennsylvania a very almost right-leaning candidate. But, you know, if this was a Democratic primary, it's very likely that that candidate, just based on the issues he supported, would not have gotten a groundswell of support among Democrats because the party's just moved that far. So, you know, when it comes to just issues, though, you know, women, Americans, they are thinking about more than a lot of the wedge issues, the social issues that I think we see on the news and that the media tends to play up. And I think there's an opportunity for, you know, conservatives, for fiscal conservatives to really push the narrative that we are allowing people to keep more of their money, that we are seeing economic growth that allows businesses to expand and gives workers end up with bonuses and new benefits because of that. You know, and then we also need to think about the international stage and where is America in relation to our trade partners, our partners on the international stage. So there's a lot of opportunity there.
Patrice, thank you so much. Happy Friday to you. We appreciate you coming on Washington Watch. We'll have you back again.
Thank you. I would love to come back. Thank you.
All right. Have a good weekend. Thank you. That's Patrice Lee Onwuka. She's a senior policy analyst at the Independent Women's Forum. Well, did you hear about the teacher in Northern California who was placed on paid administrative leave for engaging an alternative idea, imagine that, for the students to consider in regards to the recent student walkout over gun violence? Julianne Benzel, a history teacher at Rockland High School in Rockland, California, she's here when we return. You're not going to want to miss this segment. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. This is Washington Watch.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
It's Friday. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. It's powered by the Family Research Council. It's good to be with you here. Well, on Wednesday, thousands of students across the country, they walked out of classes to protest the gun violence in honor of the 17 students and teachers who were fatally shot last month at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Well, Julianne Benzel, a history teacher at Rockland High School, discussed the walkout with her students, like any good teacher would in her class, and questioned whether the schools would be just as supportive of students if they were protesting abortion. Well, guess what? You ready for this? She subsequently received a letter stating that she had been placed on paid administrative leave. Yeah, you heard that right. Well, with us now is Julianne Benzel, the history teacher with whom I was speaking about. Julianne, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. It's an absolute honor to be here.
Well, thank you so much. Appreciate you being here. Did I set that up right? What can you add to this, and how are you doing today?
Well, that's very kind. I'm doing well. Yes, absolutely. You were 100% correct. I teach advanced placement history. I teach a college level course on the high school campus. And so these critical thinking, you know, discussions, debates are not only part of the framework, but are, you know, intellectually we need to pursue these things. And so I just simply pose the question. Well, first and foremost, I would actually like to say that I wanted my students informed. The discussions that I had were last Thursday and Friday, which was March 8th and 9th. And this protest, of course, was on Wednesday, March 14th. So I first said, are you guys aware of this? And very few of my students had even any idea what was I talking about. So I said, okay, well, here's just a little bit of an overview. And I said, I need you to go dig deeper on your own and figure out what your thoughts are on this and have a dialogue with your parents. And my challenge was, if you are willing to support this protest, and if you are going to be one of the ones to get up and walk out, to protest gun violence, then would you still be willing to support students who might choose the next day, hypothetically on Thursday, who got up and wanted to walk out at 10 o'clock for 17 minutes and rally in the quad to protest abortion? And at the time, I received absolutely no backlash from my students. In fact, some of my students had just the most insightful comments, questions. I was just really, really pleased just of the exchange. And so then, you know, that happened Thursday, Friday. The weekend came and went. I was on campus Monday and Tuesday. And then 8:30 a.m., I get on campus at 9:15. So 8:30 a.m., my principal called me and said, do not come in today. You are on administrative leave.
Mm, goodness. So just for posing a question, you were, you know, yeah. I also teach online for Liberty University, and I do the same thing. I just try to stretch people and get them to think, if you're going to apply this one idea here, are you going to be consistent in applying the same standard to a different issue, which is what you were doing? And guess what? You found there's a double standard, didn't you?
Yes. And that's what I was inherently, unfortunately, I thought that would happen, that there would be a double standard. And so I was just trying to get them to wrestle with, you know, is that appropriate that we have? It actually went beyond support. It wasn't even just that they were kind of letting this thing happen with students, you know, led. It was very much facilitated and condoned by our administration. So, you know, it would another group of students who wanted to protest abortion or any other issue, quite frankly, would they be given the same courtesy and, mm-hmm. and support and be helped, you know, facilitate this protest? And I just kind of thought, I just really am not sure that would happen. Just taking a wild guess, but I don't think so.
Well, matter of fact, you heard from the administration. They wanted you to come back today, right? But you said, no, I need a mental health day.
Well, so they wanted to have a meeting yesterday morning, but I just, in my heart of hearts, knew that I needed some legal counsel and I wanted the best possible because I was not sure where this would go. Mm-hmm. So I got Pacific Justice Institute to represent me, which they were fantastic. And so we met yesterday and I was finally told why I was on administrative leave. And apparently two students and one parent complained about, you know, the conversation that we had in class. And I teach over 120 students, and they didn't corroborate any of the student complaints with me or other students or parents. So they kind of wanted to, I think their terminology was, we just kind of want to clean this up, wrap it up, and get you back in the classroom tomorrow.
120 students, and because of one, maybe two, and they didn't corroborate with anybody else, and that was enough for administrative leave.
Right. And then I think maybe understood that maybe this was not the best decision on their part and just kind of wanted to, you know, and I said, you know, I have my family, I have five girls and my husband teaches on the campus with me. And this has been a lot for our family.
Yes.
And I'm like, I am not prepared to go back.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm never sick. I have, you know, thousands probably of sick days. So I just took a mental health day.
So you did. Julian, we're facing a hard break here. Would you stay on just for a few minutes with us?
All right.
We're talking with Julianne Binzel of Rockland, California, about her experience in challenging her students there. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You can go find all this great content at TonyPerkins.com. You can follow Tony on Twitter at TPerkins. You can follow me at Russ Jones Reports. We'll be back in just a moment and continue this with Julianne Binzel.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
You've tuned in to Washington Watch. Russ Jones here, sitting in for Tony Perkins. We've been talking with Julianne Binzel, a high school teacher in Rockland, California. I've actually been there. I actually have been to that high school where I was there visiting a new church plant that was using that school to launch a new church years ago. Julianne, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for holding on. Just folks listening, let me recap. We're talking with Julianne Binzel. She's a history teacher at the high school there. And on Wednesday, thousands of students across the country walked out of their classes to protest gun violence in honor of the students that died in the Florida shooting. And she posed a question, you know, hey, would you support the same kind of walkout the next day if it were for an issue like abortion? And that didn't go over too well with a couple of people, a very small percentage, 120 students she teaches. One or two had a problem, and she received a leave of absence. And now we have her here on the program. And I just want to tell you, folks at the Family Research Council would applaud you and say thank you for your courage. You are just doing, as a parent and four kids, I want a teacher like you to push and to challenge my kids. And it happens to be one of these issues that just didn't go over too well, right?
Right. And you know what? The California State Framework actually specifically stipulates that and mandates actually that we teach critical thinking. So I'm pretty sure I was just doing my job.
Yes.
And, you know, that's I've always I've taught in this community, actually the same high school. It's my only teaching job for 20 years.
Really?
And,
wow.
Yeah. So I've just always asked that students, I've always said, I don't actually care what your political views are.
Right.
Please come to an informed opinion and back it up with substantial evidence and let's do this. And so I just really genuinely wanted them to know about the situation, find out on their own, talk to their parents, and then make sure that they were able to support another protest if that were to happen. I do, if you don't mind, want to bring note to the fact that some other students, before this even happened, but before the walkout, they really found it kind of divisive, and they said, if this is genuinely to honor the 17 victims, this whole campus wants to be a part of that. So if we could take the protest part out, is there something we can do in the quad area at lunchtime to not disrupt classroom instruction? And, you know, like float 17 balloons in the sky,
right.
You know, have a candle. I mean, they came up with some really beautiful ideas,
mm-hmm.
and the administration said no,
really?
And that, but they weren't given sufficient reason why. Mm. And so it did really seem inherently that they wanted this protest to occur and didn't want to talk about anything alternative that was actually just honoring the victims and had nothing to do with protesting gun violence.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because there definitely is an agenda at play. And, you know, having said that, in Chesapeake, Virginia, Greenbrier Christian Academy, they actually instead of protesting, they decided to build a memorial, and they built a memorial of 17 empty chairs, each with a photo, a name, and a white carnation and a white ribbon. And that's how they decided to express, you know, something. So how meaningful is that?
Yeah, I have heard of a lot of creative ways that some schools did it before school started. Some schools did it, you know, at their lunch or break, and find it really, really appropriate. It would have been something that everyone could have gotten behind.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad you brought that last point up as well, because I actually, not in the classroom, but in my own dialogue with my family and friends, I said, you know what, if you just look behind who actually initiated and funded this. And it's interesting that you guys are calling me, because I literally used the word, and I actually think I told the first news report this, but it didn't get on the show. I said, if there was some kind of general, like Liberty Day or hashtag Liberty, and we all wanted to go into the quad and just sing the national anthem, and I actually said, if the American Family Association, I said, if Tony Perkins, if the Heritage Foundation, I actually said this, I said, if they were behind this and supporting this, I think that just because they were supporting it, then this would not be allowed. And so if you just dig a little bit deeper, which doesn't take very much, right? You just see who is essentially kind of flaming these fires.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very, very, very leftist movement with an agenda.
Absolutely. Well, Julianne, thank you so much for taking time.
You'll certainly be
in our thoughts and prayers. And I hope you have some support from some other teachers out there that maybe just weren't as brave as you.
Have to tell you that I have no social media. We just made a decision as a family just to saying that we don't do it. But I am overwhelmed by the emails and texts that I'm receiving of not only parents and students who I've never had before, but from years past, who have inundated the school district with letters of support. So I just think it took kind of this unveiling to, kind of show the double standard that people are like, this is not okay, and we totally are on board.
Yeah.
So it kind of seems like we're the minority a lot, right? But I really am not feeling that in this case.
Well, around here you're not. You're a champion. and we thank you for that. And thank your husband as well. And your kids are blessed. That's all
I can
say.
Thank you so much.
Julianne Binzel, thank you so much for being on Washington Watch. Wow, that was good. That was really good. We just see this happening so much in our classrooms and in our schools. It's no wonder that homeschooling is growing. I mean, because we knowingly turn our kids over to this indoctrination, and that's what she said is going on. That's what she believes is going on with these protests. I'd love to talk with you about it. Give us a call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. You know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. And also, hey, ladies, women out there, have you ever voted differently than your husband or the men in your life or your son? I'd like to hear your thoughts on that as well. And you know, on a lighter note, you know what I've got cooking right now? I have got a big pot. I love to cook, by the way. I could have easily been an executive chef, could have gone to culinary school. It's my passion. I love to love on people. I love to feed people. Matter of fact, my wife has got me in food prison this week. She's been feeding. It's a joke, honey. You know I'm teasing. But it's been a non-meat diet all week. It's been a vegetarian diet. And she's gotten so creative. She's been digging into these cookbooks and recipes and you know, the sedentary lifestyle of being in the media, behind a microphone, behind your computer all the time, you know, can put on the pounds. So tonight is the first meat I will have eaten all week, and it's corned beef, it's cabbage, it's that traditional St. Paddy's Day meal, corn and potatoes, and going to have some friends come over, and looking forward to doing that. So I hope you're going to do something to enjoy the weekend with your friends and family. Give us a call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Any women out there, how did you feel about Hillary's comments about you not being able to think on your own separately from the men in your life, and white men in particular, in that you aren't capable of making your own decisions? I would be outraged. I'm astonished at that, quite frankly. I'm just astonished, but yet the left will lift up that they're the champions of women's rights and feminism and all of those sorts of things. Well, let's go to Tim in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, Tim. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great. How about you?
I'm good. I'm better now that you're here and you're jumping into the conversation.
Well, hey, I really, really appreciate this opportunity. I've been, for the last 4 years, I've been looking at the issue of the freedom in public schools concerning prayer, mm-hmm. concerning Bibles in public schools.
Right.
And this issue is absolutely needs to be pushed to the forefront as what you're doing. I really appreciate what you're doing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And we appreciate what you're doing. You keep it up, okay?
Well, I sure will. So, that's one issue I'm a founder of the Isaiah 3322 Foundation, and one thing that I just want to push right now is the First Amendment and the 14th Amendment. Let's talk about the 14th Amendment, because the First Amendment a lot of people know of, but the 14th Amendment, Section 1. About midway through that section, it says, "Nor shall the state deprive a person of life, liberty, mm-hmm. or property."
Right.
And that section specifically of the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution speaks directly to the state educators.
Right.
And I hope and pray that people will look more into this 14th Amendment, that section right there.
Well, Tim, thank you from St. Louis. Thanks for calling with those thoughts. We sure appreciate it. Hey, let's go to Linda in Bentonville, Arkansas. I've been there. Hey, Linda, welcome to Washington Watch.
Uh-huh. I just wanted to say that my husband, did you need me to repeat what I told him?
Yes.
I told him that my husband was thinking about Hillary, and I said, no. That's just not a good option. You need to really think about that. And if you vote for her, you might be sleeping outside. Although I wouldn't have really done that to him, you know. But, and I'm not crazy about Trump, but I was trying to figure the best of the two.
Yeah.
And it was the
other way around for you guys.
Pardon?
It was the other way around for you guys. You were breathing some truth into your husband.
Yeah, I was trying to get him to think a little more. He was thinking more because, you know, they were from Edmond, Arkansas, and he was thinking more along that line, I think.
Right.
And I wanted him to really evaluate it a little more, which he did. He thought about it.
But what do you, I mean,
I'm not telling him what to do, but I'm not following what he says either, like a blind sheep.
Right.
And I think most women don't.
Okay, good points, Linda. Thank you so much. Tell everybody hello there from FRC in Bentonville, Arkansas. Let's go to Laura in Waco, Texas. Hi, Laura.
Hello. I just wanted to address the Hillary Clinton comments about women voting for Trump and not being able to think for themselves. I am in my second year of college and am doing pretty well, and I voted for Trump myself.
Right.
That It the left goes on and on about how there's some champion for women, and they can't acknowledge that if somebody doesn't agree with them, that means they're just totally dumb and wrong and can't think for themselves. I was very insulted by that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for sharing. I would think you would be offended, but we'll see how that gets communicated in the elections.
right.
Yeah. Well, Laura, thank you so much. Appreciate you calling the show.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Let's go to Hunter in Longview, Texas. Hi, Hunter.
Yes. My wife and I, we homeschool our kids. We did so because of some of the things that you mentioned. You know, not so much even just the political indoctrination. There are things that are, taught in school that, let's be very frank and honest, are of an immoral nature. But there have been times, I'm just being candidly honest, as a believer, sometimes I think, well, are we doing the right thing for, our son or daughter? Should they go to public school and stuff like that? And I say this not to be ugly, but then when I see the product of a public education with these kids, especially some of these students from Marjorie Douglas that have been thrust into the spotlight, that they demonstrate a profound lack of education and ignorance about not only history of our nation, but how our government functions. And just to give you an idea, I'm 45 years old. I just turned 45 in January. I graduated high school in 1991. That long ago, it wasn't that long ago, and I can tell you, we were not taught this. We were taught
right.
how our government works, but they're not being taught that anymore.
Right.
It's just insanity, and so therefore we keep our kids homeschooled.
Well, Hunter, good job. Keep doing the good work. Thanks for calling. Going to get one more question in here real quick here, Maria in Houston, Texas. You think the media gets it wrong?
Hello?
Hi, Maria. Welcome. Real quick, we're about out of time. You think the media gets it wrong?
Okay. My statement was, I'm fortunate that a lot of these shows, you give good information, but they're preaching to the choir because many people only seek out information that agrees with their beliefs and views. I just want to say there were a lot of men who were voting for Hillary Clinton and people I knew who were voting Democratic because they weren't looking at the truth and the aspects. People
right.
should be outraged at what Hillary is saying. I didn't vote for her. And once I brought to attention of people what her views were on abortion and what the
right.
truth was about what they were really doing, then I know people who changed their mind. And they may not have voted on either one, but they didn't vote for Hillary.
All right. Well, Maria in Houston, I hope you're drying out down there. Thank you so much. You have a blessed weekend. We're out of time. Thanks for calling. You've been listening to Washington Watch. Sorry, folks, Karen and David, for holding on in Richmond, Virginia. We're out of time. Appreciate you holding on there. And give us a call next week. But I leave you with this. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will roar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. Folks, we'll see you next week if the creek don't rise, if the water don't rise, and the Lord tarries. Bless you. Have a great weekend.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.